Contra Podcast Conversations for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Contra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really getting into a piece of history that honestly still has ripples today. It's Barbara W. Tichman's Pulitzer Prize winner, Stillwell and the American Experience in China, 1911-45. And our mission really is to try and figure out this tragic irony at the heart of America's involvement in China during World War II. I mean, if we sent so much aid, resources, people, trying to prop up the nationalist government against Japan, it seemed vital.
Yeah, absolutely vital.
But it just failed.
Yeah.
Completely. Which, you know, ultimately paved the way for the communist victory in 1949. So the question is why? Why did Washington, and especially General Joseph Stillwell, the guy on the ground, get so wrong?
It's such a critical question. And Tuchman, well, she doesn't really hold back. Her argument is that the failure wasn't just about, you know, bad tactics or execution. It was deeper. It was the result of this longstanding American illusion about China, a kind of policy-making blindness, maybe. We sort of saw China as this blank slate ready for us to reshape it into a democracy like ours.
Right. A mirror image.
Exactly. And Stillwell, the soldier sent to make it happen, he basically becomes the tragic figure caught in the middle of this decades-long misunderstanding.
Okay. That's a heavy idea. Let's maybe start with the author, Barbara Tuchman herself.
Yeah.
1912 to 1989. I mean, she's a giant, right?
Yeah.
Legendary historian.
Absolutely. Two Pulitzers for nonfiction. Not many people can claim that. First for The Guns of August, which is a classic, and then for this book on Stillwell.
And what's really interesting, you mentioned she wasn't a typical academic.
Yeah, that's right. She was self-taught, which I think really shaped her style. Her focus was always on, like, the human story within the big events, compelling narrative, character-driving history. She makes these huge geopolitical things feel very personal, very dramatic.
Which makes sense for a story like Stillwell's. And she actually had direct experience in China, didn't she? That seems crucial.
It's huge. That's her edge. She wasn't just working from archives years later. In the 1930s, she was there.
Wow.
As a correspondent in Tokyo and China, right when the Sino-Japanese War was really heating up. So she saw it firsthand, the conflict escalating, the reality of Chiang Kai-shek's government, the conditions for ordinary Chinese people. That gives her writing this authority that goes beyond just research. She had the ground truth, as you said earlier.
Decades before writing the book. That's incredible perspective.
So the book itself, it's doing two things at once really skillfully. It's partly this intense biography of General Joseph Stillwell Vinegar Joe.
Right. The nickname says a lot.
It really does. Known for his temper, his bluntness, just zero tolerance for incompetence. But the book is also this sweeping history of the whole U.S.-China relationship during that critical period, basically from the fall of the last dynasty in 1911 up to 1945. And that core illusion Tuchman talks about, it boils down to this. America kind of refused to see China for what it actually was. You know, this ancient, incredibly complex civilization dealing with its own massive internal problems, collapse, civil war, deep-seated political traditions.
Instead, we saw potential
shaped in our image. Like, it was just waiting for American money, American efficiency, American democracy to fix everything. We projected our own values onto a situation where the internal priorities were just completely different.
And that's where Stillwell comes in. He's the embodiment of that American approach meeting Chinese reality head on. His mission sounds impossible just hearing you describe it.
Yeah.
Go reform Chiang Kai-shek's army, which was notoriously corrupt and ineffective.
Exactly. Tuchman just lays out this constant clash. American logic merit, getting things done, efficiency versus Chinese political priorities.
And you mentioned face and hierarchy earlier. How did that play out?
Oh, constantly. I mean, the American military system, it's built on merit, right? You get promoted based on performance. Chiang's whole power structure, though, was built on personal loyalty, connections, and this crucial concept of face, maintaining dignity, social standing.
So Stillwell being blunt.
Stillwell being Vinegar Joe was constantly, probably unintentionally, causing Chiang to lose face with his direct criticisms.
Mm.
And for Chiang, political loyalty always, always trumped military skill. So Stillwell trying to push for objective efficiency, it was fundamentally threatening to how Chiang ran things, how he stayed in power.
What a setup. Okay, let's get deeper into Stillwell's own story. He knew China before the war, right? From the 20s and 30s.
Yeah, that early experience is key to understanding him. He was a language officer, traveled a lot, got out into the countryside, and he developed this genuine, deep respect for the ordinary Chinese people, the soldiers. He saw their endurance, their potential, their humor, even in awful conditions.
But not for the leadership?
Definitely not for the leadership. That same time on the ground gave him this profound contempt for the Kuomintang, the KMT elite. He saw the corruption, the inefficiency, how they exploited the population. He saw it all firsthand.
So then, fast forward to 1942, and they make him commander of U.S. forces in the China-Burma-India Theater, the CBI, and chief of staff to Chiang Kai-shek, the guy he distrusts. That must have been tense.
Excruciating is probably the word. And his mission, simple on paper, make the Chinese army fight Japan effectively. But the reality hit him immediately.
The first Burma campaign.
Exactly. A total disaster in 1942. The Japanese just rolled over the Allied forces. And that's where Stilwell's famous bluntness really comes to the forefront. His quote after they retreated out of Burma is legendary.
Right, after that brutal trek through the jungle. What was it again?
He gathered the press, and instead of spinning it, he just said, "I claim we got a hell of a beating. We got run out of Burma, and it is humiliating as hell. I think we ought to find out what caused it, go back and retake it."
Wow. No sugarcoating there.
None.
Yeah.
Just raw honesty, accountability, focus on the facts. That was his strength as a soldier, but, a massive political liability dealing with Chiang and Chongqing.
Okay, so then he tries to actually do the job, reform Chiang's army. You mentioned the Sisyphean task. He had some success, though, right, with the troops trained in India.
He did. That's the tragic part. He proved it could work. He took Chinese soldiers, trained them with American methods and equipment in India, the X Force, and they became a really effective fighting unit. It showed the potential he always believed in.
But back in China itself, different story.
Completely different. Just relentless obstruction from Chiang. Because, see, still while pushing for military efficiency against Japan, that was a direct political threat to Chiang.
Because Chiang's real focus wasn't Japan.
Not primarily, no. His main worry, his long-term strategic goal, was surviving the inevitable civil war against Mao Zedong's communists. So, Stilwell wanted Chiang to commit his best troops, use that precious American lend-lease aid to fight the Japanese now.
And Chiang was holding back.
He was hoarding it. The best equipment, the troops most loyal to him personally, they were being kept in reserve, positioned for the fight against Mao. Think about it. If Stilwell actually succeeded in creating a big, modern, effective Chinese army led by incorruptible American advisors.
That army might not be loyal to Chiang personally.
Exactly. It would be loyal to the mission, to the Allied cause, maybe even to Stilwell. It would shatter Chiang, the whole system of political patronage that kept him in power. Stilwell was trying to build an army. Chiang was trying to keep his dynasty afloat. Their goals were fundamentally opposed.
And this whole thing comes to a head in 1944.
Yeah, the breaking point. The Japanese launched this huge offensive, the Ichigo Offensive. And they just slice through Chiang's unreformed armies like butter. It's a catastrophe.
So Roosevelt steps in.
Right. The situation is desperate, and Roosevelt finally sends a message demanding that Chiang give Stilwell unrestricted command of all Chinese ground forces.
The ultimate test.
And for Chiang, it was the ultimate threat. Giving an honest, efficient foreign general command of his entire army, that was political suicide. It meant losing control over the very forces that propped up his regime.
So he refused.
He forced Stilwell's recall, just got rid of him unceremoniously. Tucken makes it crystal clear. It wasn't just a disagreement. Their fundamental goals, Stilwell's military objective, and Chiang's political survival were simply irreconcilable.
Wow. Okay, let's pull back and look at some of the big themes Tuckman draws out. That clash of cultures seems central. It's like they were speaking different languages, even when using the same words.
Absolutely. You had Stilwell embodying American directness, efficiency, results-oriented thinking, and then Chiang operating within a system built on face, hierarchy, intricate political maneuvering, where survival was everything. Tuckman shows instance after instance where they just fundamentally misunderstood each other's motivations and definitions of success.
Which leads right into that other theme, the primacy of politics. Stilwell's military plan might have been sound on paper.
Oh, strategically it made sense. Reform the army, fight the Japanese effectively.
But politically, it was dead on arrival because it threatened Chiang. It almost seems naive, looking back, to send a purely military guy into such a political snake pit.
Well, Tuckman sort of suggests the naivety was maybe institutional back in Washington, but the lesson is timeless, isn't it? Technical logic, military strategy, they often get completely derailed by political reality. Who has the power? who controls the resources. That often matters more than the best plan.
Yeah, you see that everywhere.
And then there's the really dark lesson about the corrupting influence of aid. All that American money and equipment pouring in.
It didn't get where it was supposed to go.
So much of it was siphoned off. Touchman details how KMT officials stole soldiers' pay, how equipment was hoarded, sold on the black market.
Wait, so the aid meant to help China fight Japan actually ended up enriching the corrupt elite, the ones still well despised.
That's the terrible paradox. It arguably strengthened the very regime that was failing, entrenched the corrupt elite, and probably widened the gap between the KMT and the ordinary people. You could even argue it made the ground more fertile for Mao's eventual victory.
Unbelievable. That really sets up some of Touchman's key summary points. Let's talk about a few of those core ideas or quotes that capture the essence, that one about their different fights.
Right. The first one, paraphrased, is something like, Chiang was fighting for China, still well for the war. It perfectly captures their conflicting timelines and objectives. Stilwell's war ended in 1945 with the Axis defeat. Chiang's China meant his political survival beyond that, likely into the Civil War he saw coming.
And the one about the American view.
Yeah, that central thesis, the American delusion, was that China could be made over in the American image. That nails the idealism, maybe arrogance, that shaped U.S. policy for decades, long before Stilwell even got there.
And a third one hits hard, especially today. The institutional resistance to unwelcome intelligence. How did that actually work? Did they just file Stilwell's reports away?
Tuchman argues it was more active than passive filing. Stilwell was sending back these blunt, realistic reports. He was saying, look, this regime is corrupt. They aren't really fighting the Japanese effectively. Things are fragile.
But Washington didn't want to hear it.
Because Washington, especially Roosevelt, was already deeply invested in the narrative of China as a great ally, a future democratic power. Admitting Stilwell was right meant admitting their whole China policy was built on, well, shaky foundations. It would have been politically embarrassing, maybe catastrophic. So they clung to the illusion and sidelined the guy telling them the uncomfortable truth.
That resistance to unwelcome news. Yeah, that resonates. Okay, let's pivot to how we can apply these historical lessons today. What can you, the listener, take away from Stilwell's story?
Well, there's a huge leadership lesson here, I think. Stilwell was technically brilliant, great trainer, understood logistics, brave field commander, but politically.
Clueless. Yeah. Or maybe just unwilling to play the game.
Probably a bit of both. He failed at managing his key stakeholder, Chiang. He saw the mission in purely military terms. Think about it in business today. You can be the smartest engineer or strategist, but if you can't manage your board, your investors, your key partners, you're likely to fail. Stakeholder management is critical.
So technical skill isn't enough in complex situations. You need political savvy, too.
Exactly. Managing up, down, and sideways. And the other obvious takeaway is about cross-cultural insight. The book is just screaming this lesson. Don't assume shared values or goals. Don't project your way of thinking onto others. You have to do the hard work of understanding a partner's history, their culture, and especially their internal political dynamics.
Otherwise, even with the best intentions.
And billions in aid, you're setting yourself up for failure. You need that deep cultural intelligence.
So wrapping up, what's the final thought here? For me, Tuchman's argument that China was never really ours to lose is powerful. Stilwell's failure wasn't just personal. It was the inevitable outcome of this long-held American illusion. He was the victim, in a way.
I agree. That's a profound takeaway. And it leaves us with a challenge, doesn't it? The book serves as this stark warning about bias, about hearing what we want to hear. So the question for you listening now is, when you look at a tough situation in your own life, maybe in your career, a relationship, a project, what's the difficult truth? What's the unwelcome intelligence you might be resisting because it doesn't fit the outcome you want?
That's a tough question to ask yourself.
It is. But according to Tuchman's analysis of history, ignoring that unwelcome truth is often where failure really begins.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by ACATRA Foundation.